Radio.
Hey, it's Mike Robb. Radio talk show host Stephanie Miller is funny and filthy, and that's what works for her. We'll talk about that and why her book is number one already on Amazon. Plus, Defiance is back for season three on Sci-Fi, and series star Grant Bowler gives us a look well ahead to what's going to be the best season yet. Let's get to the point.
This is The Point, The Point Radio. Get The Point Radio.
Stephanie Miller is a lot of things. A stand-up comic, a political commentator, and, of course, host of The Stephanie Miller Show, a progressive talk radio program from Los Angeles and syndicated all over the world. Politics are no stranger to her. In fact, her dad was even on the presidential ticket once. But I was curious as to how from that she migrated into radio and comedy.
You know, like most people in radio, pretty much all my dreams have died. So I wanted to be Carol Burnett. That's what I thought. And then radio, I don't know for you, was kind of an accident for me. I just, when I was right out of college, I started doing, you know, voices and ridiculous comedy bits like, you know, with a morning drive show in Buffalo, where I was from. And one thing kind of led to another, as they say. And like I say, so I never really, the political part sort of came later. And I guess it's just in my blood. What can I say? I never really intended to get into political radio. And yet here I am.
One of Stephanie's latest projects is her new book, soon to be released on Amazon, getting a lot of buzz already. And I was curious as to where the idea for that came from.
You know, Mike, I think the theme that we're hitting on is pretty much everything in my life is an accident. So more luck than brains, let's just say. But yeah, the tour, the Sexy Liberal Tour was really kind of a fluke, too. Just a couple of comedian guy friends that were on the show said, hey, we should go. You know, we ended up giving, like, money to progressive causes all around the country, but we, I think it was to go help the workers in Madison is how we started. And, you know, before we knew it, like, we were selling out the Pantages and the Chicago Theater and, you know, the Beacon Theater in New York. And, you know, and then the CD became number one. And so, obviously, the book was always in the works. And it's just actually because of the tour, it was a bit delayed. But, you know, I'm happy to say we just announced it last week, and it went the first day. It's the number one political humor book in the country, on USA, in the USA. So I've been a little sort of startled because, as you know, when you mention radio, we have such a smaller microphone, obviously, on the progressive side. But you know how it is. We're all in different medium these days. We're on, I'm on Sirius XM. I'm on some stations. I'm on, you know, the iHeart app. I'm on the TuneIn app. I'm on Progressive Voices. And so, obviously, one way or another, you know, we must be reaching people because I was sort of shocked. I mean, I'm self-published. I have no publicist. And I thought it was a fluke when someone called and said, you have the number one book. It went to number one, like, you know, the first day. So, you know, I've been just shocked and delighted, really.
So what's the book about?
Well, you know, my main point, like, if you've listened, is generally always to be funny. You know, I certainly have a point of view, and I have a specific point of view coming from a very Republican family. You know, as you know, I guess my dad ran for vice president with Barry Goldwater in 1964. So my first chapter is Abandoned by Wolves, Raised by Republicans. And so it's sort of, you know, obviously a biographical take on how, where I came from and how I became what I am and why my mother is still so mortified by me. But there is quite an entertaining thing about my mom's bird that masturbates to Fox News in the first chapter. So I will give you a teaser there.
As we head toward 2016, the political landscape, needless to say, is just a little bit crowded with a lot of people all trying to head to the White House. I talked to Stephanie about her cut on the race so far.
Well, Mike, I think as you and I can both imagine, obviously, we are in the wake of, I think, almost to a Donald Trump announcement. So now you know things are going to get serious because because every carnival needs its barker. Yeah, it is incredible. I mean, it looks to me like there's going to be 20 candidates on the Republican side. I mean, it's the debates are just hilarious. I guess there's going to be a regular one and then like a kids table or something. I'm not sure how that's going to work. But, I mean, honestly, if you look at any poll, Mike, I mean, Hillary's just crushing everybody. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out on the Republican side because I don't think they have a front runner. You know, everything. Bernie Sanders polls higher than anybody on the Republican side. You know, he's at 15%. They're all at somewhere, you know, 11, 12, 13, 14% is the highest I've seen.
Stephanie may have her roots in old school radio, but she's also embraced new platforms to get her show heard, including podcasts and streaming as well.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, I think you're right. They always say content is king, and I think technology is changing, and particularly for younger people. When I speak at graduations, I always say, when they ask how you can get in radio, I say, well, you can't. There's no more room, but good luck. I'm not the most hopeful graduation speaker. I'm like, in my life, I found somewhere when God shuts a door, somewhere else he shuts a window, too, and you're screwed. But anyway, kids, good luck. But I think you're more seriously, you're right. The key is innovating. You do have to innovate. You know, the Happy Hour podcast was born out of desperation, out of trying to monetize because we're on so fewer stations than the right wingers. So, yeah, absolutely. Like, I think it's that's the key is how to monetize. And because most kids don't listen to the radio, they listen on their smartphone. So that's why we're on apps. You know, we're on Progressive Voices or iHeart. You know, so yeah, I am hopeful in that regard. In that, you know, somehow I'm managing to keep this little train going.
Stephanie's book, Sexy Liberal, can be pre-ordered right now on Amazon. And you can find out how to listen to Stephanie in your area by simply going to the website, stephaniemiller.com. Let's jump right into it. Here's the very latest in pop culture. Get ready for Batman Day, Round 2. Last year, DC held the event in honor of the 75th anniversary of The Dark Knight. This year, they're doing it again, coming up on Saturday, September 26th, with events planned at comic book shops, bookstores, schools, libraries, and other retail partners. If you have a comic store or know someone who does and they'd like to sign up for the event, they can do so at the DC website. It's all in anticipation of the release of Batman The Dark Knight Returns, the deluxe edition hardcover. That hits stores on the 23rd of September. It's a mini That 70s Show reunion. Ashton Kutcher and Danny Masterson are teaming up for a new series called The Ranch, which will be on Netflix. It involves a semi-professional football star who comes back home to help his brother run the Colorado family ranch. The show's been given a straight-to-series 20-episode order and will premiere on Netflix in 2016. Another show that's going straight-to-series is American Gods, based on the novel by Neil Gaiman. Starz gave the budget and the green light to the show as well. Michael Green and Brian Fuller are both attached. They'll write and showrun the series as well. Neil Gaiman will executive produce, and production will begin as soon as casting gets underway. Fans of the early years of Batman get a couple of treats toward the end of the year with two new collections coming out, both centering on some of the work of author Bill Finger, by the way. Catman, A Celebration of 75 Years, is a 400-page hardcover that has the early stories by Finger, as well as stuff by Ed Brubaker, Denny O'Neill, and more. And then on top of that, almost literally, is the Batman Golden Age Omnibus, an almost 800-page hardcover with some of the early Batman stories from Detective Comics and the first seven issues of his regular title as well. That'll retail for just about $75. Both will be available in time for the holiday season in comic stores in November. Z2 Comics, also known as Zip Comics, the place that put out that new Harvey Peacock graphic novel not that long ago, are now entering the comic field with regular titles that'll appear toward the end of the year. The three titles include Welcome to Showside, which is a kid's title, Carver of Paris Story, which is an homage to the Hugo Pratt Corto Maltese property done by Chris Hunt, who's said to be a protege of Paul Pope, and Alan Son of Hellcock as well. All three titles turn up in comic stores later this year. The point. While graphic novel sales not necessarily as big a jump as comic sales were for the month of May in comic stores. In fact, they were pretty much flat when compared to where they were in May of last year. Still some interesting trends to talk about, including the fact that there are five different publishers represented in the top 10, much different than it is for the comic list. The top 10 best-selling graphic novels for the month of May in comic stores begin at number 10 with Saga Volume 1. The Valiant at number 9. At number 8, Deadpool Volume 8, All Good Things. At number 7, Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. Saga, again, this time Volume 4, comes in at number 6. Marvel's Civil War comes in at number 5. Southern Bastards Volume 2, Gridiron, is the number 4 best-selling title. At number 3, Rat Queens Volume 2, second best-selling graphic novel of the month, Night Nurse, from Marvel. And the number one bestseller goes to DC, Batman Earth 1, Volume 2. Best-selling graphic novel in comic stores for May this year. The sci-fi series Defiance is already into its third season, and we sat down with star Grant Bowler to talk about not only where his character's headed, but what's ahead for the show as well.
We've obviously established Defiance as not only an incredibly dangerous place to live, which very heavily features in that first double episode you just talked about, but also that a town that's always been on the verge of disaster or boom or collapse. It really reminds me of kind of California and the Gold Rush in some ways, Defiance. My character's arc this season is fabulous. I'm really, really happy and grateful for what Kevin's given me to do this year, because he's much more about a story arc that's going on for him in season three than he is about chasing around other people's story arcs, which is what, by and large, he was doing in one and two. So, Defiance, as you said, when we set out at the beginning of season three, is a shell of what it was. Basically, when Arisa set off the terraformers and destroyed New York, a new element was created called Newlinite. And Newlinite is a rock that's so hard that no Earth-created machinery can penetrate it. So Defiance now sits on this cap, this impenetrable cap, which means the town can't get at the Ghoulinite, which means that they can't power themselves. And a byproduct of that, of course, is Nolan and Arisa are trapped under the Newlinite in Old St. Louis, so they're kind of stuck. So that's our backstory going in. I know most of you, if not all of you, have seen that first double episode. So that's our starting point and the reason why they've been trapped in that sleeper pod for so long. This season is very much about getting the town back on its feet, but as always, very much about the town's survival. I think the town in season three, thanks to Ramtuk, is in more peril and actually comes under more direct attack and direct fire than it ever has before. Defiance actually gets successfully infiltrated in season three by an enemy force and directly assaulted. So it's a much more perilous place to live. It's on its last legs. There's no energy. There's lines for food. There are very little goods being sold. If you look closely in the first few episodes, you see that the market's now moved inside the need want. There's no outdoor markets anymore because there's so little to be gained and traded. So Defiance is, it's a much sadder place. A bit, Soviet Russia circa 1960s. Nolan, Amanda, and some very strange bedfellows are going to have to come together in order to put the place back on its feet.
Grant said there's some pretty cool stuff coming up.
This season's been fantastic for Nolan. You know, he's vulnerable for a start, and I've really enjoyed that. He's falling down this season. You know, he has some challenges, and he comes apart at the seams a couple of times. We've always dealt with a Nolan that's so pragmatic, so forward-facing that, he just tends to swallow his blood. There's a great old expression, swallow your blood, old boxing expression. I think it comes from, those great 1930s heavyweight champs. But, yeah, he's always kind of been very much about that, swallowing his blood and moving on. And this season, it catches up with him. This season, he doesn't have another step in him, and that's been great to play. It's been great to see in the character too, because it really grounds him and humanizes him for me. And the other big development for Nolan this season is through that vulnerability, through that not being able to cope with everything, and through his. His own challenges this season, his relationship with Arisa changes. And that is just on song this season. I can't say how happy I am to have done this season with Stephanie. The relationship's fantastic. It's always been my favorite part of the show. And it's become so much more full because she's now in a position where she's picking him back up, where she's supporting him, where she's trying to figure out what's going on with him. And these two are having an adult father-daughter relationship where it's really complex, and it's and it requires compassion on both fronts, you know, and it requires a lot of patience and understanding from both of them. And they get sorely challenged. Their entire history, all of his memories about her and bringing her up, are directly challenged in this season. And he finds out that the way he parented her, or what he thought was the way he parented her, wasn't even close to her experience of what went on. So, yeah, it's wonderful in those ways.
There's also some new additions to the cast this year.
We've got three major new players. We have Ram Tuck, who we meet in the opening stanza. He's a warlord, if you like, for the Votanus Collective. And you know, Arissa destroyed the Earth Republic, who were the balancing force to the Votanus Collective. And our big threat in season three initially is that this this military, you know, force of alien-based, you know, races was moving north from South America. And so Ram Tuck is the advanced guard of that Votanus Collective. And he's brutal, and all he wants to do is raise Defiance, burn it to the ground, and kill every single human being in it. So he's our first player, and Lee, who played him, did an amazing job. Lee Tergesen, he did an amazing job at playing him with an enormous amount of flair and humor, and he's a genuinely frightening character. Then we come to the other two major new arrivals, who are the Omek. Now, we established in season one that there were seven races of Votans. We only saw six of them. And in season two, we saw the Galani, which we thought was the last race of aliens. And they were an energy-based life form. So that's why we hadn't seen them before. And at the beginning of season three, we discover that there is an eighth race that predated all of the other races. Wow. Called the Omek. And the reason we never heard about them before was that the Votans, the aliens who came to Earth, you know, saying that they, you know, they just wanted to emigrate and they were peaceful, had deliberately left this race behind. They'd sabotaged their ships, they'd destroyed their means of escape and their arcs, and they'd left them behind to die. And it's basically the Votans' shame and guilt that means that humans have never heard of this race before. And in our very first double episode, the Omek arrive, a father and daughter, Tevkin and Kinsey, played by Nicole Galicia and Conrad Coates. And they arrive right at the beginning. They're on Earth. They don't seem to have a problem with humans, but boy, have they got payback to deliver to the aliens.
So after three seasons of playing Nolan, what has Grant learned from his character? And has he taken any of that into his personal life?
That's a great question. You know, it's a question I'll probably best answer in 5 years' time, life being what it is. But it's taught me to be a better father to my daughter in a strange way. That would probably be the biggest thing. Playing that role and that twisted, crazy father-daughter relationship that is so amazing. It always brings me back to I have to look at my relationship with my kids. I have to look at my relationship with my daughter in order to find material, if you like, to mine, to play the scenes. And so I'm constantly turning over my relationship with my children in my head and my relationship with my daughter in particular, and examining, you know, my own strengths and weaknesses there, where I'm like him, where I'm unlike him, you know, what I do well, what I don't do well. I don't know if I would have done that much examination in the way I have, in the objective way I have, had I not been playing Nolan. So that's probably the first biggest thing. And the second thing has been leading a cast, you know, and kind of having to be, you know, on deck in a production like Defiance, which is extremely complex and large, every you know, pretty much every shoot day, and try, you know, to the best of my ability to lead from the front. That's been a growth curve for me, and something I've really loved, something I really, really, really have enjoyed, and has been really fulfilling for me personally.
Defiance has the roots of science fiction, but the look of a Western. And like Grant says, that's what seems to work.
I think our story is sci-fi, but our archetypes are Western. So, you know, we tell these, incredibly technological stories. We tell these, you know, pure science fiction stories about, you know, arc tech and artificial intelligence and faster than light travel and everything else like that. But you know, we have a mayor, a lawkeeper, a doc, and our archetypes within that town. Even the fact that it is a small town, isolated in a wilderness, all those memes, if you like, all those overriding archetypes are Western themed. So I think that's where that comes from, and I think you can never get too far away from it when, you know, my guy is the lawkeeper and the doc is the doc and the mayor is the mayor. But having said that, there's an ease to archetypes that I think allows us to shorthand a lot of stuff story-wise, which means that we can get into the meat of what we're trying to do story-wise much more quickly. And I think that's where genre really is strong, you know, where it's very, very useful, is you can assume a lot of things based on the genre as an audience and get into a story faster without having to establish so much.
Catch up on everything Defiance right now at sci-fi.com, and there are new episodes every Friday, only on Sci-Fi.
The Point.
That's it for the podcast right now. Want to know what's coming up? Well, there's a lot. We're less than 3 weeks away from Comic-Con, too, and you don't want to miss any of that. The place to find us is always at GetThePointRadio.com, plus ComicMix.com, MichaelDavisWorld.com, and in the iTunes podcast directory as well. On Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, we're under The Point Radio, of course, and we'll see you back here in a few days.
Get The Point Radio.